I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News.
I'm Dale Arnold, WEEI Radio in Boston.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
And I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and you are tuned in to the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday morning. We welcome our friend Dale Arnold to our cast. And gentlemen, it's NCAA, the height of the NCAA tournament now as we are in the regionals. And last night we lost a marquee team, there will be for the another year of a one and done in Kentucky will not end in a national championship as the Wildcats went down.
You know, Bob, it's funny because Cal saw this coming after the way the thing was rolling out in his region and in his bracket. There was a famous quote yesterday with him telling his kids, don't drink the poison of believing that they had an easy path now to the Final Four. Kansas State, I thought, had a perfect play. They wanted to play a physical game. They wanted to play a low-scoring game. And guys, at the end of that game, because of their defensive game plan, Kentucky had attempted almost as many free throws as they did field goals.
Yeah, except it was the wrong person.
Right.
The wrong guy kept getting fouled.
Well, and they had a couple of opportunities at the end to win it. But, you know, sometimes when you bank on a lot of freshmen and it does come down to trying to win against an underdog team, you can't count on it. They got two shots at it to try to tie it up, but, you know, they lose by essentially a three-pointer. You know, Kentucky, it was funny, Mike, when we were talking last, you said Kentucky's set up best of anybody. We all kind of believe that. And that whole, I mean, the Thursday games, it's just incredible how many of these favorites are being knocked. You don't even have time to keep up with the fact that, oh, Gonzaga got knocked out and Nevada got out, because it's like, well, which is the biggest upset of them all? And Kentucky's program, anytime they lose, gets questioned about, well, so what are they going to do next year, because who's going to come back and all the rest of it. But hats off to Kansas State, Dale and everybody. I did not see them coming.
Well, I sure didn't see him coming when I saw him play on the 20th of November at the Bramlage Coliseum. I actually saw them play back in November, and never in my wildest imagination would have projected them into a tournament team, let alone a team that could advance deep into the tournament. But that shows you, by the way, how long to see. That's four long months ago. We're in the college basketball season.
And Dale, last night was the dichotomy of this tournament, because you wanted to hug John Beilein for the way Michigan played, ringing up 99 points last night. But if you're watching Kentucky-Kansas State, at halftime, the Kentucky Wildcats, who are pretty good, had, I think, six baskets, but they were only down by 4 points.
I guess at this point, I lapse into my John Calipari, woe is us, we're too young, it's my fault, it's not the kids' fault speech, right? Because that's pretty much what he said afterwards. Here's an idea for John Calipari, right, and the Kentucky Wildcats. How about if you mix in a free throw at practice once in a while, huh? You know, just a thought here. Just mix in a free throw once in a while. I got zero sympathy for that team. I got zero sympathy for that program. You play the way they do, you deserve to lose. They did lose. And I'm sorry, there's not a whole lot of people here in Massachusetts who are going to be crying crocodile tears for John Calipari.
My question is, how long is Big Blue Nation going to like this approach? They've won once now and it's now 6 years ago. And I just find it hard for me to believe that people are really happy down there with this MO.
Well, that's a really good observation, because there's two forms of excitement. There's the recruiting excitement, which, you know, in college basketball towns like and programs like Kentucky, it's year round as to who they're pursuing. You guys know this. We've all covered this. You know, who's coming from this high school? Oh, we got another blue chipper. We got another top five ranked thing. Whatever. And like the off season is almost like your season. Look who we collected. And then there's what you actually end up doing with it. And I think in today's world, 5 or 6 years is too long. And if I'm guessing, I don't live in Kentucky, but if I'm guessing, they're fed up with it already. And they're like, okay, well, we don't want to win the recruiting season. We want to win something in the tournament. And, you know, I thought you did see some inexperience in that. And as I mentioned before, and in the final seconds when they had two cracks at a three-pointer and didn't come close. And, you know, I agree with you, Bob. I don't know what he's going to do about it, because that's still the way you win the game, is to recruit. And what's he going to do? Start recruiting guys who promised to stay for 2 years?
Well, no, you're right. They're locked into this. But I'm just saying the fan experience is not what it once was and not what it I think ought to be in any of these schools, which now includes Duke, in terms of how you once rooted for a team and continuity and saw a kid develop and you got to really have feel for the players and as players and people. And they are totally denied this in Big Blue Nation. And, it's okay if you win, but he won, 6 years ago.
Yeah, that's a while ago. Yeah. So now number nine goes on to play, what's it going to be, a 9 and an 11?
Yep.
Eventually here. So we're either getting a 9 seed or an 11 seed. And Loyola continues to be, as Mike has pointed out, Michael's favorite story, his parting shot the other day about what we really need is Loyola to keep going. And they do once again. I mean, with an unlikely 3-point shot from an unlikely player, and now they're on to the Elite Eight.
How about making 12 shots in a row to start the half?
Yeah.
I'm curious too to get your guys' opinions on this. With all of the bracket busters, with all of the upsets, with all of the stuff that's happened, I'm really curious to see what the effect is on TV ratings. Because I do think that everybody likes it when UMBC, goes out and beats Virginia, and that's a great story, and it's great. And everybody loves Sister Jean and Loyola Chicago. But ultimately, as people's brackets get blown to smithereens, I think their interest in watching this tournament wanes. I'll be curious to see what the ratings are for some of these late round games.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, Dale. People are, it is a brand name sport. They've created that kind of scenario with these coaches and the brand name schools. So I think you're very definitely onto something there.
Well, first of all, this is the same as any big tennis tournament. Upsets are great to drive interest early in the tournament, but they screw up the back end. And for all of the romance of what we bring to this thing every year, yeah, it's really good the first weekend when they're trying to draw people into the tent. If there's some buzzer beaters and some upsets and we get the Golden Retrievers to beat Virginia and spare us having to watch Virginia play any more basketball in the tournament. But you have to know that there is a bill that will be presented at the end of the tournament. And I have a feeling the ratings are going to be down throughout this tournament. And they're getting what they want. They're getting what they want. They're getting early round excitement. But man, oh man, if let me tell you something. They're rooting for Duke and Kansas. They're rooting for Duke and Kansas big time because people sitting out there who aren't wonky about this stuff, they want to know the schools they want to know at the end.
Well, they still have a chance for that, Mike. I mean, Michigan is a well-known program, okay? The Michigan basketball isn't as well-known as football.
I should have included them, yes.
But Michigan's a well-known program. And if what ends up happening is, and we should just tip a hat to John Beilein and his crew. I mean, halfway through the season, they did not look like they were going to be anybody to contend with at the end. And he's now, I think this is the third time in 6 years that he's in an Elite Eight. That's impressive stuff. That kind of consistency.
He's great.
And he's got them actually playing some defense. They've always been an offensive team. I mean, they kind of live and die with hot shooting. And obviously, when they played Texas A&M, it was over early. I mean, they had 20-point leads throughout that game. And that's a blessed night for him, and he's going to go, thank God, okay. And it counts absolutely nothing to Saturday. Saturday they're going to play Florida State, and they may come out cold. Florida State's a good team. But if Michigan should advance by beating Florida State, and this isn't funny, it's more like a football game, isn't it? Like Michigan-Florida State to get into the – it doesn't sound like a football team. If they get in from this side and the chalk holds on the other side, then, Dale, what you said before is it's actually okay. It's always okay if you have one, Butler, one of the four that makes it is the upset. Then people watch. It's what happens like what's been happening in the whole South bracket when there's nobody left to play. They lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then it gets a little boring. But I still think they have a chance. If they get blue chippers on the other side, if it's a Duke on one end and Villanova on the other end and Michigan on the other end and Loyola, That's a fantastic Final Four. I think everybody would be watching.
Look, I was just going to say, Bob, it's not likely, but your Final Four could be 2 11s, a 9, and a 5. And the 5 is West Virginia. Think about that for a minute.
Maybe.
No, it is. It's. But Mitch, I'm going to agree with you and say that I think if you were to check the tournament, I'm just off the top of my head, I'm willing to risk this, over about a 20 or 25-year period, you'd see that quite often the configuration of the Final Four is three chalk and one outlier. And one surprise, more very often, and so that this would be in keep if this is the way it materializes. If we get three chalk and one outlier, that would actually be quite the norm when it's all said and done. However, you get here, we just didn't know how we were going to get here. I'm going to repeat something we talked about on Monday, which was. We knew this was going to be a crazy tournament. It was that kind of a year. We knew it was going to be a crazy tournament. We just didn't know the specifics. We just didn't know, who was going to go. We didn't know it was Arizona was going to be the first big name to fall and fall in a humiliating fashion. That kind of thing we never saw coming. We didn't see Virginia being humiliated by a 16, not just losing to a 16. And that created the interest early on. But didn't we all know that it the kind of year this was and that it was going to be a wild and woolly tournament, to say the least.
But by the way, hold on a second on outliers, okay? Loyola's an actual outlier, okay? But Butler, when they made the Final Four, this continues to happen. I'm not talking about a lower seed making the final. If it's Florida State or another great, or Kansas State or another great big state university, that's form in this tournament. We talk about this all the time. The NCAA tournament is great big state schools and Duke and Villanova most of the time. And by the way, Mitch, When you look at what Beilein's doing at Michigan, the football program should try to get a coach as good as John Beilein. Don't you think so, Mitch? Okay.
Yeah.
And when you look at Michigan, Michigan may be the model for the kind of team we still want in college basketball. I looked at the box score from last night. A senior, two juniors, a sophomore, and a freshman. That's a great mix.
Well, that's such a good point, Michael. And to the point that Bob just made a little earlier, think about this. You have to have a certain patience to believe that your team will grow and stick with juniors and seniors. And Calipari has painted himself into a corner, and it's what I said before. Are you going to recruit guys who are lesser than? Well, now Calipari is like – he's like the Avengers. Like they're not going to put a bad actor in the Avengers. They're not going to put a guy you never heard of in the Avengers. He's like the Avengers are just stuck using stars now. They're stuck. They have to. But a team like Michigan can say, well, okay, we lost that recruit to Kentucky, and we lost that recruit to whatever. So we got these other guys, Muhammad Ali, Rahman, and we'll keep them, and they get to play to their junior year. And then Calipari Beilein is blessed with actually having veteran players. But it actually takes a certain amount of patience to go through a 2 or 3 year process, allowing them to get older. Calipari's almost painted into a corner that way. So it's weird. Duke too.
Oh, he is into that corner. But Coach K's in it too.
Yeah, I just
That's
said,
the
Duke
amazing
too.
Thing. Coach K is out Calipari. Out Calipari-ing Calipari, beating him at his own game, winning a recent national championship with three freshman starters, got the most quote-unquote, everyone agrees, the most quote-unquote talented team in the tournament with four freshman starters. And this is the Duke MO. I posed that question earlier about Big Blue Nation, and maybe there's going to be some impatience about the lack of results with this methodology. But Coach K hasn't faced this problem yet because he is getting some results at a recent vintage and may get it again this year. But whoever would have thought, if someone told you 10 years ago that Mike Krzyzewski would be doing what Calipari is now doing, we wouldn't have said, no way. He'll never do that.
Well, unlike Calipari, he's still alive right now in the tournament as we speak.
Yeah,
so Dale and Mike.
Deliver the goods again.
Dale and Mike, do you guys think that Duke right now is the favorite?
Duke's a favorite, but I tell you what, Dale, think about this. And again, I'm excited because I wanted to hug Beilein afterwards and thank him for nearly scoring 100 points. I will go back to that because that looks like real basketball. And I know they live and die by the three. So does the whole NBA. The sixth guy last night was also Duncan Robinson, Mitch, was also a senior. So two seniors, two juniors, sophomore, and a freshman. And attention must be paid to a team that rang up Texas A&M by 27 after Texas A&M had just beaten North Carolina by more than 20 points.
See, doesn't it feel, you guys, and I'm going back to Bobby's point, doesn't it feel that Beilein's a better coach And Calipari's a better recruiter. Because if you think about...
Cal can coach, but listen, Mike.
Here's the deal. As Bob said, are they going to put up with this in Big Blue territory? Well, Big Blue is all well and good with recruiting a bunch of one-and-dones. And if they fail, Coach Cal gets to stand up there at that podium last night and say, you know, we're real young, you know, it's, what are we going to do? Beilein doesn't get to make that excuse. He's got three seniors on his team. If they screw up, it's probably the coach who screws it up.
All right, Dale, I'm going to make you, this is going to be exciting for you. I'm turning you into John Calipari, okay? So I want to know how you're going to go about changing your business plan. Are you sitting in the living room with the kid saying, I'm sorry, son, do you see yourself as a one and done? Because if you see yourself as a one and done, I've got to go find a two and done or a three. How does he recruit with these kids knowing that he gives them the best chance to be a first round draft pick in the NBA?
Well, and to the point you guys made earlier, he's painted himself into a corner. He is that guy who will take that high school senior and turn him into an NBA player after a year of college basketball. You probably can't go back now, but the next coach at Kentucky can go back because there's going to be a next one probably sooner rather than later.
Well, what's funny is we're not saying, is there any chance that a coach could convince one of his players that, hey, we didn't get it done this year. Our goal as our team was to win a championship this year. No. Come back next year and let's go win that championship like Miles Bridges did. It's like it's out of the question. Nobody even brought that up. We're just assuming that they are only there to rent a year because they have to in order to go in the NBA. And even asking them, even encouraging them, and this is the new MO, guys, with coaches. What are you going to tell your player, you know, what are you going to tell your star freshman about coming back? Well, you know, I want the guys to have whatever opportunities. I let them make the decision. I remember a time when a coach would say, I'm going to tell him he's not ready yet, and I'm going to tell him we need him. And, you know, we need to come back. We want to take this team. If Calipari could convince these guys, hey, winning a national championship is worth trying to come back to college for another year for, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
Right.
But it hasn't even come up.
Marvin Bagley's not coming back, Mitch.
Well, I know. It's not like Calipari's the only guy who has this problem.
This is what Florida did. This is what Corey Brewer and Al Horford and Joakim Noah did 10 years ago. They did it. And it's the last time we're going to see it. They came back to win again, and they did it. And that's the last great team, by the way, in my opinion, my humble opinion. The last truly great college team was Florida 06-07, the second time around. But this is where we are. I'm going to give you a team that kind of fulfills the model. We haven't mentioned them yet. And by the way, the team I think is the favorite team, which is Villanova. Mm-hmm. Villanova still doesn't have to resort to the one-and-done mentality. Jay White doesn't. He gets quality players, but not necessarily those kind of players. I mean, his best player is a guy who's developed all along, and that's Brunson. And of course, Bridges is definitely going to be he won't last 4 years, but he's got Bridges. But, I mean, I'm saying Villanova could do that. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. I want to tell you something about Coach Cal. Back as far as 1996, when he had Marcus Camby, and Marcus Camby came out after his junior year. He came back after his sophomore year wanting to go into the NBA. He was trashed by Big Country Reeves in the tournament and made to realize that he wasn't ready for the NBA. He comes back for his junior year. He's player of the year, if you recall. And he comes out. And I went out there to cover. It was a big deal then. I went out there, the 2-hour trek from Boston to Amherst, to cover the announcement that Camby was coming out. And even then, Calipari was framing it like a proud papa that I have produced this pro. And this is a graduation day. I think he actually used that phrase, you know. He was thinking about it even then, guys.
Dale, can I say one more thing about this tournament? Because I talk about this all the time, and it's why it's the single most unusual sports event in this country, because nobody knows any of these guys, okay? Nobody. Don't you think it's unusual that the storybook story right now of this tournament is Loyola of Chicago, and most of the country knows the name of a nun more than it knows the names of Clayton Custer and Marcus Towns?
It's exactly right, but it's also why it's the great story.
In a star coach, you know, in a thing where coaches are the brand, no one knows who Porter Moser. You know, right. I know. Look, who knew? Raise your hand if you knew who he was before the tournament started.
No, I didn't.
If you knew who their coach in Loyola was.
I also didn't. I also didn't know the nun, I have to admit.
The Nun? Is that it? Don't you think that's a little impersonal, Mitch? The Nun?
I have respect. I don't assume I haven't met her yet, but
like the
by the way,
nun?
Michael, before we leave this and go on to another topic, I want to warn you that as a hater of low scoring basketball and slogging defense, you've got Syracuse, Duke, who are playing the same zone now.
Oh,
okay,
God.
Unlike Syracuse playing everybody else who's never seen a 2-3 zone, Duke has used a 2-3 zone during the course of this year.
When they
played the last time, Duke won 60-44. You're
trying to upset me.
I am trying to upset you because I love to watch you steam come out of
your ears. No, it's great. I think we should have more. You know what the 2-3 zone is? It's the shift in baseball. That's what it is. That's what it is, Mitch. It's the shift in baseball. It's the New Jersey Devils trap from the old days. That's what the 2-3 zone is.
It's the personnel, guys, too. It's the personnel. He has personnel to implement it better than he probably ever had. Here's the interesting thing about this game. Coach K learned his zone stuff from Jim Boeheim, his cohort on the national team. They're close friends.
Right.
He has learned everything he knows about zone and both of attacking it as well as using it in defense from Boeheim. That's Boeheim's worst nightmare, is that his pupil is his opponent tonight.
And Dale, I will give you one name. We talked about nobody knows any name. I think the one name that people actually know because he's been around a little bit is Grayson Allen.
And nobody likes him.
Yeah, nobody likes Well, okay. To love. Well, maybe you have to get to know him better. But he is going to be a major factor in this game. You know, guards break down zones, and he is one storyline that I can think of that the people actually watch, you know, to see the personality.
Yeah, they're probably waiting to see if he makes it through the end of the game. I'll translate Mitch Albom's point to Mike Lupa, okay? Duke Syracuse. Whee! Like, we just can't wait to watch this, can we? Let's see if Grayson Allen doesn't get kicked out tonight.
Michael, I'm getting hungry, Michael. Tell me something. Tell me something good.
Well, okay, Mitch, since you asked.
Yes.
You know, Mitch, Freshly, you should know this by now, but Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy, no matter what life throws your way. Even, Mitch and Dale and Bob, even if life throws a 2-3 zone at you. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. No more worrying about having to figure out what you have left in the fridge, and especially no mess to clean up after. Freshly chefs source the finest all-natural ingredients they can. And by the way, these chefs, Dale, by the way, the other day when we were talking about golf, we were talking about Bryson DeChambeau, and Albom referred to him as the French guy. Okay, but I think he's a chef for Freshly. And they work with nutritionists to ensure their meals are, the French guy, are as healthy as possible. I happen to like, I know it sounds like I'm stuck on this. I like the penne, I like the shepherd's pie, and I like anything that has Parmesan in the name. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy. Janine Mitchells, we're eating healthy tonight. customize your weekly meals. No, you don't do that. From their constantly changing, rotating menus, more than 30 chef-crafted options by Chef DeChambeau. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. I know they're happy with these reads. Don't act like they're not. Let me tell you, there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in my daily life, that I have a chef-cooked dinner waiting for me at home. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25, listen to this, Arnold, $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's $25. Off your next, freshly.com/sportsreporters. Okay, let's go to the NFL for a second, okay? Because we got plenty of baseball to talk about, especially Red Sox, Yankees, and the season starts next week. However, did you all notice that the league and even the president, they've won now, okay? They've wiped out dissent in the National Football League. Eric Reed says no more protests if he can get a job, except he doesn't have a job. But what they've done now, what they have done, is they have the culture that they want. Kneeling players during the anthem was bad for business. So you know what they've jail? You know what they've gotten? They've gotten Eric Reed to take a knee down, a knee now in a different way.
All you have to know is this: that Johnny Manziel worked out at University of San Diego the other day in front of 13 NFL scouts. Yep. Johnny Manziel stinks. Colin Kaepernick can't get a job. That's all you have to know. Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reed, they are done in the NFL. I'm sorry it's wrong, but they're done. The NFL just does not want to have to do anything to do with any of these. They will give Johnny freaking Manziel a job before they give Colin Kaepernick a job.
Eric Reed was the first player to kneel alongside Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
For those who are, you know, not sure who he is, with San Francisco. He
five-year defensive back.
Went to a Pro Bowl 1 year. He is at a position that teams are invariably in need of help. He plays safety. Is he the best safety in the league? No. Colin Kaepernick isn't the best quarterback in the league either. But can they play? Absolutely they can play. And Eric Reed finds himself, after all the free agent shuffling that went on last week, out of a job. And now, here's the problem for Eric Reed. Eric Reed has now come out and said, I'm going to find a new formula for protesting. I'm not going to kneel anymore. There are other ways to do it. I have problems with that on two levels. It's like, if it was the right way to do it last year, you can stand by your convictions and do it again this year. So he has, as you sort of suggested, Michael, he's kind of been... He's seen the writing on the wall. He doesn't want to be unemployed like Kaepernick is, like, permanently. So he's come out and said, well, I'll find another thing. But he also put out a tweet in response to people, you know, making comments about him, because he's taking abuse on Twitter and all those social media sites, as you might imagine. Anyone who has any kind of opinion, period, takes abuse. He wrote this: the notion that I can be a great signing for your team for cheap, not because of my skill set, but because I protested systemic oppression, is ludicrous. If you think this, then your mindset is part of the problem too. Now, one tweet like that, that gets sent out, he may have been tweeting to, you know, a critic or whatever, that gets sent to GMs around the league, and they go, we're not having it. You know, we don't want it. And that's wrong, and it is absolutely true. And so, Dale, you said never done. I mean, was that hyperbole, or you think he's really not going to get a job?
I think that GMs would give him a job. I think owners won't. I think this is one of those instances where the owner tells the GM, find somebody else, because I can't take a chance with my fan base of putting that guy in my uniform. I think this is one where owners are getting involved in telling GMs, I can't go near this guy.
I don't think there's any question. I have an existential question for everybody here. How far up the food chain do you think you'd have to go for somebody to take, you know, to start protesting in a forceful way and be safe? I mean, is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it Brady? Who is it? How far up the food chain do you think that guy could risk this?
Anybody who markedly wins a game for you, that's where you draw the line. Colin Kaepernick lost that distinction with his play towards the end of the last time we saw him playing. He wasn't the Colin Kaepernick that went to a Super Bowl the last time we saw him playing. He was on the decline. He was benched. If you are all those guys that you mentioned, any running back that makes a difference, you know, Le'Veon Bell, guys who are game changers. To me, they will not, no matter how they protest, they'll find a reason
Antonio
to keep...
Antonio Brown. Yeah. I'm just asking. Right,
Bob, are you guys aware of what happened at the Kings game last night? Mm-hmm. After with the protests going on in that part of the world about the shooting of an unarmed black man. If I'm bollocksing the guy's name, I apologize. Okay, Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Kings, took the microphone on the court. And said, we are so, and I'm just going to read a little bit of what he said, because you know what? Owners can do this, okay? Owners can make statements. But if you're asking how far up the food chain, how about starting with an owner? We are so very sorry for your loss, he said. We at the Kings recognize people's abilities to protest peacefully, and we respect that, Okay, think about these words. We here at the Kings realize that we have a big platform. It's a privilege, but it's also a responsibility. It's a responsibility that we take very seriously, and we stand here before you, old, young, black, white, brown, and we are all united in our commitment. I could go on, but you can see this was an eloquent moment from this man, and guess what? He can talk about peaceful protest because he owns the freaking team.
And, yeah. And he was losing money. Because they were blocking people from getting
right.
into the game.
Right.
They had virtually
right.
nobody get into the game. People in the upper bowl were moving down to the lower bowl seats. And here's an owner who's willing to say, well, if it cost that event cost me out of my pocketbook for walk-up people or whatever it was, so be it. This is important. I agree with you, Michael. The highest person in the food chain are the owners. But in the NFL, not the NBA, the big difference between NBA owners and NFL owners. In the NFL, it's sometimes like a cabal. And Dale, I guess you feel it's a strong enough cabal to keep a guy literally out and unemployed.
I might actually, I might reword Bob's question somewhat, just to this extent. It's not how high up the food chain can you go and protest and not pay the price. It's how low down the food chain can you go. Because the guys at the top can do anything they want. Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, nothing's going to happen to them. If Tom Brady took a knee and raised a clenched fist during every anthem, nothing's going to happen to him. The question is, how far down the line can you go? Because Colin Kaepernick couldn't do it. Eric Reed couldn't do it. There are several others. I mean, you'd have to go quite a ways down the food chain, quite a ways down, before you find a guy who, now you could do it and still not get in trouble for it.
All right, Dale, let me ask you and Mitch a question. Let me ask you and Mitch a question because you do daily radio shows, okay? And I think I know the answer to this question, but I want to know what, if you could somehow come up with a rough percentage of how many of your callers, not your listeners, how many of your callers were violently opposed to players taking a knee during the anthem, what would that percentage have been when we were in the teeth of that?
Well, I live in Massachusetts, which is supposed to be, you know, the most solidly blue state in the union, and I bet 75 to 80% of my callers were dead set against taking
right,
a knee during
right.
the anthem.
And I live in Michigan, which is not as hardcore blue, and I would say the percentages are equal, if not higher. It was very hard to find during that time 5-10% of callers who supported it. And you know, part of that, and most of those callers were African-American callers from Detroit. Part of it is because it's always easier to sort of call a radio show and act patriotic than it is to call a radio show, at least the radio shows that we do. There are inner city radio programs in Detroit where I'm sure it was all reversed. You know, 80% of the callers were saying this is exactly what should be done. So it kind of depends on your audience, too. We have to own up to that. But it is easier to espouse patriotism on a radio program than it is to espouse dissent and know that, you know, you're going to take. And that's obviously the case with the NFL. The NFL is all about soldiers coming home. And even though there's some weird history with that stuff, you know, that'll be a discussion for another day that you know, the Army actually was paying for those moments in the NFL. Certain teams were taking money for the promotion of the armed forces thing. But that's kind of the image that the NFL likes and the flag and patriotism and soldiers and military and. I don't know. It's a long road to hoe for Eric Reed, and we'll see if he ends up getting picked up.
Bob, can I just throw one thing to you? Because, again, you have lived your entire life in Massachusetts. As you listened to the dialogue on this subject, and obviously it has subsided now, okay? I'm sure it's not a hot-button topic for Dale anymore. It's not a hot-button topic for Mitch. But don't you think it's amazing? Because my friend Bob Ryan is a great student of history. He keeps it under wraps, but I happen to know that, okay? Isn't it amazing that at this point in this country's history that people could still act as if dissent is unpatriotic?
Well, it's that's interesting. This is a broader sociological or political arc that we're talking about here. The country has allowed a direction of thought to evolve goes, and we can have the debate as to when it started, but it certainly, I'm trying to be, you know, careful here, but doesn't no, surprise noticed. Me in the political
Couldn't
climate,
tell.
Okay? We've gotten, we've gone through to a point where we are allowed, tapping into people's worst instincts.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And knee-jerk instincts, and also a basic. I'm not sure about what's going on in public schools. I don't know what they teach anymore. I don't even know who learns about the Constitution or about the Bill of Rights or how it works. The appalling ignorance of astonishing numbers of people in this country is just never ceases to amaze me.
All right. Before we go too far down that path, let me shift gears for us and go to baseball, which, as Mike pointed out, begins next week, while the calendar still reads March.
I know,
there are opening day games. Be that as it may, the AL East is fascinating again. The two star teams that, you know, always seem to be playing one another. When you live out in the Midwest like I do, it always seems there's Boston, New York playing one another. For real, these are the two clear favorites in a division that always has a lot of drama to it. And Boston has largely the same team that they had last year, plus J.D. Martinez. New York has, you know, a lot of exciting young and new faces. And, of course, there's a guy named Stanton who joined their lineup as well. You guys live in these
Wait
cities.
A minute. Stanton's on the Yankees? Yes. Has that been covered
what?
In the New York papers?
I know,
Bob, did you know this?
Well, this is a breaking news program.
I
like
something
to,
every day, Mike.
I like to break news. tell me from where you guys sit down. I'm the outlier here. You're in these cities. Who gets the early nod as the favorite between those two?
Well, let me just say this, okay? I believe that this is an unbelievably interesting dynamic because, for a couple reasons. One, I think there's more urgency for the Red Sox to win than the Yankees, even though the Yankees came within one game of the World Series. And the fun of this, Mitch, and Dale and Bob can address this, you know, it's been, well, 14 years since the Yankees-Red Sox was as good as it's ever been. After 2003 and 2004, like 37 regular season games, 14 games in the American League Championship Series, the greatest comeback of all time. I think it's about to get really good again. But, Dale, I'll let me throw this to you. I actually think the Red Sox are more of a win-now team than the Yankees are.
Well, when you look at the pitching, you know, and you know how long you're going to be able to keep Chris Sale before his contract explodes. Is David Price really back to being David Price again, or is he going to be the same guy who was screaming at Dennis Eckersley on a team flight last year? you know, they've got some interesting decisions to be made. Is Dustin Pedroia going to be able to play again at normal levels, or is he just going to be a shell of himself the rest of his career? I'll say this as I look at this Red Sox-Yankee dynamic. I say the Red Sox have the better pitching, the Yankees have the better lineup, and I still think Aaron Judge is coming back to earth this year.
Well, the Yankees, the power thing is undeniable. The middle of their order includes four guys who, in theory, could hit 40 home runs. I'm including Mike and Gil Bird, although I know he's having a terrible spring. But three guys who can certainly hit 40, I think that's a safe statement, and beyond. So we know the middle of their lineup. I think 1-9, the Red Sox may have as a better or, you know, a lesser, you know, tougher outs, 1-9 right now. But though the Yankees did add, you know, a third baseman and a second baseman, Neil Walker at second. It's going to be interesting. But I think it's on. Mike, I just can't agree to. I think the Yankees, all this publicity about the slugging, yesterday they announced they're going to open up the ballpark 20 times this year, 3 hours early, so people could come in and watch batting practice to see all the home runs.
All right.
I mean, they're selling themselves this way to a public. Do you think that the New York public isn't going to be expecting a win this year?
Well, first of all, if Greg Bird hits 40 this year, you send up a flare, okay, if he stays healthy enough to hit 40. But, Bob, here's all I'm saying about the Red Sox, and you guys know this. Dave Dombrowski is on the clock, okay? He has been, as always, an all-in general manager, okay? The Yankees have a much better farm system now. The Red Sox used to have this kind of farm system. It has been largely gutted by Mr. Dombrowski. I think Bob and I have talked about this, Dale. Up and down the batting order, I think the Red Sox batting order actually might be more balanced now because of J.D. Martinez than the Yankees batting order is. I just think that after the last 2 years especially, And the way they flamed out first against the Indians and then against the Astros. Now they're going up against the best. You know, the Astros did something historical last year. They beat the Yankees and the Red Sox in the same baseball October. Okay. I just think that the natives are extremely restless on Yawkey Way. Can I still call it Yawkey Way, by the way?
You know,
temporarily.
Dave Dombrowski was in Detroit before he went to Boston. And I noticed something that he did there that it seems that he is doing now in this position. He likes veteran guys. He believes in that they were once, we used to hear this a lot, you know, they had a down year last year or whatever it was, but I think they've got, you know, clearly got the credentials to come. And I look at the Red Sox and I see J.D. Martinez, former Tiger, who they're hoping, you know, performs the way that he has performed in the past. David Price, former Tiger, hoping.
You give.
Yes, we do.
You give, and it's like Ryan's from Trenton. Trenton makes the world takes.
We are the salad bar for the rest of baseball. Just come on through and take whatever you want. Put it on your plate. We'll be happy to give it. And then we'll replenish and give you some more. But meanwhile, these guys, David Price, you're right, Dale. I don't know if David Price is ever going to be David Price again. Certainly, the postseason gives him a lot of trouble. So I see a number of guys on Boston that I saw the same modus operandi with, like, Victor Martinez and guys like that Dave Dombrowski had. We still think that they can still be. Whereas I look over at the Yankees and you see, you know, I mean, okay, you think Judge is going to come back to earth? Maybe he's going to fly higher than he did last year. Stanton, young. Severino, young. So, I don't know, from afar it looks to me like there's a more potential upside with the Yankees that hasn't been discovered yet than there is with Boston. You're hoping guys return to form. Is that accurate, Dale?
My friend Tom McVie, the former Bruins assistant coach, when talking about a particularly poor hockey player, said they used to pull a dirty trick on him when they dropped the puck. In David Price's case, they pull a dirty trick on him when they play a game after 162. So it's the exact same thing. He turns into a pumpkin on October 3rd or something. And until he stops being a pumpkin, they're going to have that thing to overcome, and he's going to have that thing to overcome.
Can I ask one question about Aaron Judge to you guys? Because this is fascinating to me, okay? And we know about Trout and Altuve and Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, okay? Because I'm noodling around to do something with this. If you brought them all, I'll ask all of you guys this before we go on to parting shots, okay? If you brought all the best young players in the world and you brought them down to the field and you got to pick first, okay? And you're not just trying to win. It's like when Red Auerbach told me once, he'd take Michael instead of Russell because he had to sell tickets too. Would you be able to pass up Aaron Judge with the first pick in that imaginary schoolyard draft?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
For Altuve. Okay. Because he strikes out too much right now, you know, okay. And Altuve doesn't. And Altuve is a more complete baseball player.
I agree with you, but Judge is a pretty good fielder, too. Well, Bob, what would you you understand the question I'm
Altuve
asking?
And of course, there's Trout, too. And I'll say this, though, Mitch. The strikeouts, you know, the whole mentality of baseball has changed.
Yes.
The game is, the strikeouts acceptable byproduct of a skill such as a Judge possesses, particularly because he offsets it with the walks too. You know, that's it. So that's it.
Fair enough.
Altuve is and Trout is they're the two best baseball
How
players.
About you, Dale?
I think right now.
Yeah, I mean, I know baseball, the way it's being played nowadays is basically you either hit a home run or you strike out anyway. I mean, that's basically it now in Major League Baseball. So it's almost like the Trout, Altuve, Mookie Betts players are almost the outliers at this point, the guys who can do a little bit of everything. Having said that, I think there's something to be said for being able to get on base or drive a runner in from second with two outs without putting the ball over the wall. I think there's a value to it. And look, I said before, I think Aaron Judge is going to come back to earth this year. He came back to earth after the All-Star break last year. I think his crash could be even further this year. The Yankees are still going to be great. Their lineup is still going to be unbelievable. I just don't know that he's going to be the centerpiece of it like he was in the past.
All right, let me tell you about Buffalo
Wild
Wings.
I'm hungry, Mitch. Mitch, I'm hungry.
I know. I was hungry before. I've eaten two Freshly meals while we're here.
Yeah,
and now I'm ordering Buffalo Wild Wings. They love a Cinderella story. It's a tale of the underdog, the unexpected. And by their unexpected nature, you just can't predict when one is going to happen. It makes them great. Also makes it frustrating. But at any moment, you could miss that Cinderella sighting unless you are spending the whole month of March at B-Dubs. I highly recommend just moving in for the rest of the month because it's the official hangout for NCAA March Madness. And here you will catch every second of every game. You'll be able to look back and tell the story of the team you watched climb from their way to a low seed, and there are a lot of those still in the tournament, all the way up to the champions. Go to Buffalo Wild Wings, hang out, watch the games. Wings, beer, spots.
Oh, stop it.
Time for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan, lead us off.
The NFL Competition Committee is trying to clarify what is and what isn't a catch. How nice. Congratulations. But left untouched is a far more serious issue. Once upon a time, I knew a fumble when I saw one. You knew a fumble when you saw one. Condoleezza Rice knew a fumble when she saw one. Even Justice Potter Stewart knew a fumble when he saw one. A guy went down, the ball was loose, fumble, somebody's got it. But then came that mysterious conclave in the middle of the night, perhaps that Texas truck stop where they had that surreptitious coin flip, remember that?
Yeah.
And suddenly it wasn't a fumble if your knee was down. Ridiculous. You go down, you lose the ball, that's a fumble. Very simple. Okay, if there's, let's say, unnecessary roughness involved, okay, that's a penalty. I am serious about this. Give us back our fumbles. It's not too much to ask.
Dale Arnold.
You know, there's an event on April 2nd at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, and it's known as the NCAA Basketball Championship. I'll point out that on April 8th, there's another event going on at the Mercedes-Benz Dome in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's known as WrestleMania. And believe it or not, these two events are the same. I've looked through it. In wrestling, you need a baby face. In this case, it's Loyola Chicago. They beat Nevada yesterday. They've got Sister Jean. You can't be a bigger baby face than Sister Jean. No. Now, Bray Wyatt has a move called the Sister Abigail, but I digress. It's not the same. You need a heel. Kentucky loses to Kansas State last night. John Calipari is the ultimate heel. No handshakes to K-State after the game. That's a heel move. Good move by Calipari in Kentucky, but they're the heels. You need a plucky underdog. In this case, it's UMBC. Now, okay, they didn't make it as far as you'd like, but they're the plucky underdog. Sort of like Daniel Bryan, who's trying to make his return to big-time wrestling. Triple H is known as the game. Heck, the way this thing is going, Mike Krzyzewski will have to be the game before this is all over. This is a babyface event, WrestleMania. So's the NCAA tournament, and I'm not talking about one shining moment at the end.
Mike Lupica.
You know, I said this morning on Twitter, and now we'll say it on our podcast. Who would have ever thought that Cinderella, in an event, March Madness, that sells Cinderella with both hands, would turn out to be a 98-year-old nun? Now, I was taught by a lot of nuns growing up, first at St. Patrick's School in Oneida, New York, and later at the Sacred Heart School in Nashua, New Hampshire, not so far from where Dale is. But I've never encountered one cooler than Sister Jean. And I'll tell you why. Because people like the story of Loyola, and they like her even more, and now the country has embraced her. Listen, we all know how many lousy stories there can be in sports. But we still come to sports asking it to do one thing above all others. Surprise us. That's it. That's the contract. Surprises. And that's what Loyola has done. And that's what Sister Jean has done along with them. Will television overdo her story? Of course. It's what television does. It's in the genetic code of the people who broadcast these games. But this time, it really is just pure fun. I just hope they don't offer her her own show.
In an NBA season where tanking has become as acceptable as bad free throw shooting, this score still grabbed my attention. Charlotte 140, Memphis 79. Yeah. That's the Memphis Grizzlies, a professional team, not the Memphis college team. The college team might have scored more. 61 points is the biggest blowout margin of this century and the sixth biggest ever. Memphis, which had already lost 52 of its 71 games this year, fell behind by 12-2, 37-14, 75-42 by halftime. At one point, the lead was actually 65 points. And may I remind you, this wasn't the Golden State Warriors racking it up. This was Charlotte, who was 10 games under 500. Memphis coach J.B. Bickerstaff said, quote, "Tonight we put on a performance that no one should have been proud of." Well, he was right about the performance part. But more and more, you believe these performances by losing franchises are actually being silently condoned by management in hopes of a high lottery pick. It's tanking. It's terrible. Thank goodness the game was in Charlotte. If the Grizzlies had actually lost by 61 points at home, they really should have given every fan a refund. Then again, keep playing this way and they won't have to. Nobody will show up. That's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We're glad you were able to join us. We do this every Friday and Monday, and we'll be back again on Monday, obviously talking about who is in the Final Four. Dale Arnold, Mike Lupica, Bob Ryan, I want to thank you guys for joining us here. And on behalf of those guys and myself, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific weekend.